everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Tell It As It Is podcast on the Hockey Podcast Network. I am your host, as always, Griffin Youngs, and I hope you have enjoyed your week so far up to this point as we get closer and closer to the beginning of the season every single day. And you know, you wouldn't believe me if I told you, but I am quite tired. It is not the beginning of the semester until you truly feel that exhaustion for the first time. I know you know what I'm talking about. You get home from work, you get home from school after waking up early and putting in the work, you sit down and you just feel that dumbbell weighing down on your brain. You know, we all get to that point, and it's always much earlier than we think it's going to be. It's been, what, 2 weeks into the semester? I have to get up early a couple times a week, which is much more than I'm used to. And, you know, you feel it after a little while. But nevertheless, we push on because, believe it or not, we have Avalanche stuff to talk about. That's not speculation or PTOs, because Avalanche players that they own the rights to are on an ice surface doing stuff. It's not training camp yet. No, it is the preseason to training camp, which is a preseason to the preseason. So we're really at a preseason to the preseason of the preseason before the regular season. That's right, of course, I am talking about development camp, where the Avalanche rookies and prospects get together for a couple days before traveling out to Arizona for the prospect tournament. And we have just concluded day three of development camp. Also, we have more Avalanche jersey stuff to talk about, because apparently they felt the need to change the jerseys again for some reason, and to be frank, they don't look good, but we'll get into all of that in due time. Let's start with the development camp. Now, I'm going to be straight with you guys. There is, quite frankly, no way for me to watch development camp unless I would to buy a plane ticket to Colorado and go watch it in person, because for some reason they don't like stream these. They don't make these accessible for the average fan to watch. So I've had to gather information from people who are far more connected than I am to just gather a general consensus of how the 3 days went and how the overall 4-on-4 scrimmage from yesterday ended up going. And the general consensus that I have seen is that Alex Newhook and Bo Byram are well above this tournament. They are ready to play. This is merely a tune-up. They are leaps and bounds ahead of everybody. They are NHL players. They are going to be making the roster out of camp. This is merely a formality for them. And like I said, just a tune-up, especially for Bo Byram. And that was the plan for him coming into this from the beginning. You know, he plays a good amount of games last season. He's getting better every game. And then he deals with injuries. He deals with COVID. He never steps into another game after taking that high hit against Vegas late in the season. So, I mean, at a certain point, he just hadn't played a ton of hockey in the last 365 days. And that was the concern for him coming into last season, is that he just hasn't played a ton of games outside of the World Juniors, and we needed to get him up to speed again, and that's kind of what we're doing this time. But luckily, we have the development camp and the training camp for him to go through, and the preseason before we get to the regular season. But he was outstanding through all 3 days and a dominant force in the 4-on-4 scrimmage. The same with Alex Newhook. He's ready to go. There is no question about that. He is ready to go, and I have very high expectations for him, and it's I'm not drawing that from three practices and a 4-on-4 scrimmage, but by all accounts and by everything we've seen from him last season and just the few showings he's shown so far, you can tell the players that are ready, he's ready to go. He might get into one of the tournament games in Arizona, but that's probably it. No reason to risk him getting injured before training camp. This is just to get him up to speed before he auditions for that second line spot in training camp. Newhook also had some words to say after camp, saying that he thinks it's a great experience and a great opportunity to be involved with the rookie camp, to get his legs under him, as well for everybody else, to get comfortable with being in Denver and with the altitude, to get back in game shape, and his goal is to make the opening night roster, and that's what his mindset is at camp, is to make an impression and establish himself early on, as well as to help the younger guys in their first camps, even though it kind of is his first camp. And being around the organization and helping some of the younger guys is a big part of it for him too. And this really is his first rookie camp, so it's good to see that he's already taken some form of leadership here as well. But the expectation coming in is that Newhook was going to dominate this, and so far through the three practices and with the 4-on-4 scrimmage, he's far and away the best player on the ice. He is fully ready. I mean, he's getting to a point like on the ice that he's not even trying to shoot. He's trying to pass the puck around and not shoot unless he absolutely has no choice, which took place a couple times during the scrimmage for him. But to be quite frank, him and Byram are above this tournament. This is well below their skill levels. But like Newhook said, this is to get in shape for the most part and get back to game speed, and importantly to get reacclimated to the altitude of Denver, which is something that gets overlooked a lot with the Avalanche. I think we take that for granted a lot, is dealing with the altitude, especially for younger, newer players. I think that's something that you need to pay attention to. But the interesting thing is that Newhook is playing in this development camp as a center, and we're all expecting Newhook to be playing on the wing to be beginning the season. And it seems like they're still committed to developing him as a center, which is a great idea. Absolutely, they need to be doing that. And he'll probably be seeing some time as a center during the regular season as well, maybe in a fourth line role in days like Compher is taking that wing spot on the second line. I mean, I'm making a lot of assumptions here before training camp even begins, but I'm assuming that Newhook's going to make the team and probably be playing those top 6 minutes. But the idea is that he is a center, and development camp here, he's still going to be developing as a center. It's harder to play center than play wing. It's easier for centers to move over to the wing than otherwise. And we still have to remember that Kadri is still expiring after this season. And if Kadri leaves, we're going to need a replacement. And this is basically what Newhook is going to be auditioning for in this upcoming season, is how much emphasis needs to be placed on signing Nazem Kadri this offseason. If Newhook absolutely performs and shows that he is ready for top 6 minutes in the NHL, it makes Kadri a bit more expendable, and that you don't have to sign him to a big raise. You can keep Newhook on his ELC and spend that cap elsewhere. So interesting to see that that's the path they're taking with him at development camp. Not at all a surprise. It's absolutely what they should be doing, and it'll be an interesting thing to watch to see just how many times this season he is going to be playing as a center. I imagine it's going to be at least a couple times during the year. Even if it's just in a fourth line center role, we'll still get a pretty good idea of what he'll be capable of. And this is a kid that's going to grow a lot. I mean, he already looks this good now. He looked ready to play in the NHL immediately last season, and he's shown even just in these practices that, like I said, this is well below his skill level, and that he is capable of so much more. And still, he's going to keep growing every single season and only keep getting better. So I'm excited to see what Newhook can do in this upcoming season, if this incredibly small sample size of development camp is any indication to go off of. But while those two are very clearly ready, there is one first-round pick that is not, and that is Oscar Olsson. He's not ready, and no one expected him to be ready. Let's make that clear. This is not a disappointment or that this guy is a bust. It's just he's 18 going up against far older players that have experience playing against men in the NHL, and Olsson is used to playing in the OHL, and is, again, only 18 years old, and he was getting pushed around a little bit. He still made some things happen. He scored in the shootout, and he wasn't horrible, but you could see that he's just not at that point yet. So he will obviously be going back to play with the Barry Colts and be a dominant force in the OHL this season. And like I said when we drafted him, we're probably not seeing Olausson for several years down the line. He's a good prospect, and I like what he can bring to the table, especially on the wing. And I like the fact that he was here to begin with. I mean, from what I remember, he's the only player from this draft class to be participating in a rookie tournament this season, which says something. It shows that the Avalanche believe in him. And the expectation, like I said, was not for him to come in here and be as good as Newhook or even as good as Sample Ranta, who we'll talk about later. It was for him to get a feel of the organization, for the organization to get a feel of him, for him to just begin to get acclimated into the environment and just see what he can do. And we saw that just not there yet. And you know what? We still have a lot more to see from him in the upcoming rookie tournaments. He's still getting minutes in these tournaments. From what I remember, he's playing on the first line with Newhook, and he's bouncing back and forth between them. But yeah, he's not being in the AHL. He's definitely not playing in the NHL this year. He's going back to the OHL to go with the Barry Colts, and he's going to have a really good season, and we'll see where we stand with him next season. There's nothing lost here. It's an 18-year-old kid who's still got a lot of growing to do, and he's going to make those strides, and I believe he's going to be in the NHL eventually. So I have no concerns. If anything, I am encouraged that he was here to begin with and that he's already getting that valuable developmental experience. So moving on now to some of the other prospects through the first few days, one of the guys that has impressed me a lot ever since we drafted him and impressed me a lot over the last few days and is quickly becoming one of my favorite prospects on the team, that is Jean-Luc Foudy. I love this kid. And the only question for him now is whether he goes back to the AHL to continue to play with the Eagles or if he's going to go back to the OHL to get more playing time with the Windsor Spitfires. And honestly, I have no problem either way. For those of you who don't remember, Jean-Luc Foudy was a third-round pick for us in the 2020 draft, 75th overall. He is an outstanding skater, one of the best skaters of that draft class, and he has just continued to impress more and more ever since we drafted him. He has quickly climbed our prospect list, and he found his way into the AHL last season, played 34 games, and put up 14 points, and continues to impress here so far at development camp, playing second line behind Newhook, that second line center, and already he seems to be ahead of schedule and could be something in the NHL sooner than later. Not this season, but maybe the season after that, we could start to see Foudy maybe get some cracks in the NHL. And he's only 19, and he's definitely someone that I want to keep an eye on in the future, and especially just over the next three games for the rookie tournament. I want to see what he can do. I'm very excited to see what he can bring to the table. And the last guy that's really worth talking about here is Shane Bowers, or at least on offense. He was playing pretty well. He looks like he's bulked up a lot. That's been one of the complaints against him, is that he seems to get pushed around a bit. Not anymore. He seems to have bulked up a lot, and he is taking getting an NHL opportunity this season very seriously, because if he doesn't get one this season, then more likely than not, he might get traded. I mean, we all remember Bowers was a part of the Matt Duchene trade that came over from Ottawa with Sam Girard, and obviously the same trade that we got Bo Byram in. He was one of the big prospects that came along with it. He just hasn't gotten a crack in the NHL yet, and now has got to be the time for him. He's been very solid in the AHL, and last year wasn't great for him, but he looks like he is raring to go this season. If he doesn't get a crack in it this year, like I said, probably going to get traded, and I imagine the team that identifies him and trades for him is probably going to do a little bit of a better job with him, and he's probably going to turn into a pretty solid player down the line for them. So I hope that he can figure it out and work his way into the lineup this season, because, like I said, this looks like it might be his last opportunity to get a crack with the Avalanche, because if it's not going to be with us, it's probably then going to have to end up being with somebody else. And you never want to be on the bad side of one of those deals where you give up on a prospect, he goes somewhere else, and he makes it big. Because I think that he's not a star. He's not going to come in and break the game open or anything, but I think he can be a useful player. I think he just needs an opportunity, and he's ready to go this season. So another guy to keep an eye on as development camp winds down, and especially during training camp, and even as the season rolls on, if there's injuries that start to pile up, keep an eye out for Shane Bowers to join the squad sooner than later, because he's going to have to deserve it at this point. While Martin Kaut isn't here at the development camp, same goes for him as well. Him and Bowers are kind of in the same spot, that they are starting to run out of time on their development path. And if the Avalanche have too many players blocking them, they could be players that we see get packaged at the trade deadline. Because if the Avalanche are going to go buying at the trade deadline, they do not have their first or second round pick to shop with. It's going to have to be digging into your prospect pools or the 2023 draft. And Kaut and Bowers are going to be valuable players, and if they do want to upgrade this team, then those are probably going to have to be guys that go the other way in deals, unless they can crack the NHL lineup and prove that they are valuable players, not even just now, but next season as well. And before I move on, I should bring up Sampo Ranta, who scored a goal in the 4-on-4. Looks like he is delivering on the hype for him coming in. Rambo Santa, my other favorite prospect for the team, big wild card, I think, for this upcoming season. If he does impress in this development camp and in training camp, he could get a lot more time than we expect this season, or he could just stick around in the AHL this season and just continue to develop. We don't really know with him at the moment. I don't really have a ton of insight on him at the moment, but that's about all I have on the first 3 days of development camp so far. We'll check back in after the prospect tournament has concluded with a little more information and right before training camp begins. So moving on now, I did want to continue on Alex Newhook and Bo Byram and talk about what are their chances to win the Calder this season, because to me it seems like the race is just about wide open. There's no real clear-cut favorite like there is in some years. Last year it was pretty clearly going to be Kaprizov right from the get-go, but this year it seems like it is a pretty wide open race. There's a couple names in there. Cole Caulfield, Trevor Zegras are the two favorites, and deservedly so. They're very good prospects, but Caulfield, I think, also comes from the fact that he was pretty good in the playoffs, and so that's just maybe a little bit of recency bias talking there. And Trevor Zegras, I'm very impressed with. Other guys like Spencer Knight are on there too. But both Newhook and Byram are not the favorites, but they're definitely in there as well. I think it would be hilarious if Bo Byram actually wins the Calder this season. How hilarious would it be to have two Calder-winning defensemen on the same team and then eventually have them playing on the same pair? I mean, that just wouldn't be fair at a certain point to have Makar and Byram on the same pair. And you look at the odds for the Calder this upcoming season. Cole Caulfield, this is looking at DraftKings Sportsbook. Cole Caulfield at plus 225, Trevor Zegras at plus 500, Spencer Knight at plus 800, and at fourth, Alex Newhook is tied with Moritz Seider at plus 1,000. And Bo Byram is tied with Nick Robertson and Shane Pinto at plus 2,000. Now, I gotta say, those are some pretty solid odds. If Alex Newhook impresses in training camp and breaks into that top six role beside Kadri and Burakovsky and delivers, absolutely he is going to be in the running for the Calder this season. If he delivers on the hype that we have for him, no reason for him to not be a finalist for the Calder this upcoming season. And especially team success, and we're expecting some team success for the Avalanche this season, obviously, that can end up being a tiebreaker as well. And you look at some of his competition, Cole Caulfield, it does not look like Montreal is going to be very good this season. Trevor Zegras is on the Ducks, who are going to be terrible. That's not really a question. The Ducks are going to suck. They're not trying to be good at all. I would say Spencer Knight is the biggest competition because I think Florida is going to be really good, and I think Spencer Knight is going to be a huge part of that this season. To be quite honest, Spencer Knight's my prediction to win the Calder this upcoming season for the reasons I just listed. I think he's going to be a huge part of Florida being really good. I think he's just going to have a really good season because otherwise they're going to have to rely on Bobrovsky, and we've seen how that goes. So Knight taking over the starting job in Florida, and I think Florida is going to be one of the better teams in the league this season. So honestly, at plus 800, I'd put money on Spencer Knight to win that because starting goalie is just gets a little more credence than second line winger. But Newhook, if he gets that top six spot, the door is wide open for him. And I was a little curious about their rookie statuses because they both played games last season. They both played under 25 games last season, so they're both still rookies. And playoffs does not matter. As we all know, Makar made his debut against Calgary in the 2019 playoffs, and he played for full two rounds and still won the Calder the next season. So they are both still rookies. And with Byram, I think it's a little tougher than Newhook because Newhook just has like a top six job opening just waiting for him. And as I've talked about on the past on the show, is that the Avalanche's defense has kind of has a block right now of just three very elite players in Makar, Girard, and Toews. And the best Byram can hope for this season is to crack the top four and to be the fourth guy on the pecking order there. But might be a little tough for him to get Calder consideration behind those guys. I mean, maybe he'll just be outstanding in that spot and get Calder consideration anyway. But winning it, I think, is a little more of a challenge for him than Newhook, because it's going to be tough for him to get a ton of attention and play a ton of minutes behind those three guys, especially power play and penalty kill. He might not get the same substance of opportunities that Newhook could get that could come with a top six role like power play time for Newhook. So if I had to pick one to bet on, it would be Newhook. But Newhook's odds are plus 1,000 and Byram's are plus 2,000. So if you feel confident about Byram, putting a bet on him on DraftKings Sportsbook is not at all a bad idea. And just the odds themselves, I think they're fair. Caulfield, I don't think is going to win. I think he's going to be very good. Again, Spencer Knight, I think, is going to win it because I really like Florida this season, and I think Spencer Knight performed very admirably at the end of the season and against Tampa Bay in the playoffs, and I don't think there's a ton of tape on him yet. I mean, I've talked about it before. You don't have a ton of tape on goalies sometimes, and you can't figure out how to beat them. I'm suspecting that's going to happen with Knight this season, but again, if Newhook can get in there and crack that second line, play really well with Kadri and Burakovsky, and put up a really solid rookie season and provide valuable depth scoring to McKinnon, Rantanen, and Landeskog, he'll definitely get some consideration. I mean, just how generally unfair is it that we even get to have this conversation, that we can talk about two guys in the same season that have pretty realistic Calder Trophy odds while we're 2 years removed from Cale Makar winning the Calder just 2 years ago in 2020? It's ridiculous. It's unfair. We've done such a good job at drafting in the last few years. And I guess Makar and Byram were fourth overall picks, but you still got to give credit for Byram because that is a trade. They got Ottawa's first round pick for Matt Duchene that led to Bo Byram. So you still have to give management credit for that and acquiring that pick at all. And Newhook was a mid first round pick. Sometimes you miss on those. You look around at the players that were picked around him during that time, I mean, they definitely hit on this one. I mean, him and Caulfield are kind of tied at the hip because Caulfield went 15, Newhook went 16. Actually, now that I think about it, that'll be a very interesting race to watch this upcoming season if Newhook does indeed make that top six role. To see him and Caulfield go toe-to-toe for the Calder could be a very interesting storyline to follow, especially if Newhook wins, because then we get to say that Montreal was wrong and they should have picked Newhook and we got the better player. But getting back to my point, the next pick was Peyton Krebs for Vegas, who is a good player. He was dealing with injuries at the time during the draft. I think he like tore his Achilles or something crazy like that, and he was like limping up to the stage to put on the Vegas jersey. Thomas Harley, Lassie Thompson, Ville Heinola. I mean, these are pretty solid players. Samuel Pullin, Tobias Bjornfort, Simon Holmstrom. And Connor McMichael, a few picks later for the Capitals, is a home run for them. But Newhook might turn out to be one of the best players of this draft. So I'm very interested to see the Calder race this season. I'm excited to see that the Avalanche have more players in it again, just like the Makar race from a few years ago. The Calder race is always very exciting because you only get one shot at it. You can only win the Calder once in your career. When like Makar lost out on the Norris last season, and I wasn't bothered by it because I know he's going to win plenty of them in his career. But if he lost out on the Calder to Quinn Hughes, that's something you can't get back. You can only win Rookie of the Year once. It's something you can only add to your resume once. You get one shot at it. If you don't win it, you can never win it again. So I'm glad that he got it, and I hope that these two can get it, just because it'd be hilarious to have two Calder winning players in the last two out of the last 3 years on the same team, along with Nathan MacKinnon and Cave Landeskog, who both won Rookie of the Year in their own right. Just the Avalanche, they produce Calder winners, so I'm hoping we can continue that trend again this season. It's just the one problem I have with Newhook and Byram has nothing to do with them at all. It's how they're going to be dressed this upcoming season, because the pictures have been released of the Avalanche's new road jerseys. How are they different, you ask? Well, they're not really that different. The only difference is that the numbers on the back are now blue. And I gotta say, these are ugly. That seems to be the general agreement all around, is that these are ugly, but I mean it. These are ugly. They do not look good at all. I don't know why we keep picking at these. Stop picking at the jerseys. If you want to change the jerseys, change them. What is with this trend over the last few years where we have just screwed with the jerseys, like just a little bit every single time? Last year it was the blue pants, which didn't look good. They stuck out and they looked weird. And now we're changing the numbers on the back to blue. And the thing is that there is not a single part of it that looks good. It sticks out on the jersey. It's right underneath the burgundy nameplate and the burgundy shoulder pads, and right above the burgundy stripe at the bottom. So it's the only blue on the jersey. It sticks out like a sore thumb. And when I first saw it, I thought it would at least match the pants. No, it's a different shade of blue. So it doesn't even match the pants. The pants are like a darker navy blue. This is like a light blue. It's kind of noticeable. Maybe in this picture of Sampo Ranta, maybe it's just the lighting, and maybe they actually are the same shade of blue, but from this picture, it doesn't look like it is, and that's a big problem, because it is really ugly. And there wasn't anything wrong with the black number. Why are we doing this? It would honestly look better if it was a burgundy number. If the 75 on Sampo Ranta, like the picture is here from Aesthetics, was burgundy or just black. I don't know why we feel the need to change this all the time. Is it just to force people to buy new jerseys because the one they have now is technically outdated? Because if it is, that's not a great business practice. And two, it's just ugly. I don't want to wear that. If I was to buy an away jersey, I'd buy an old one. So I really hope that this is not what we're taking into the season, just slowly removing black from all of our uniforms. We used to have the black pants, and now they're blue, and it just doesn't look good. We have the blue gloves. And not that I don't like the blue of the Avalanche. I feel like they got to commit to something. I don't like these slow, small changes every single year. Like, if you're gonna change it, change it. Change it all at once. Don't change it once every year, put the blue gloves and the blue pants and now a blue number. It just it doesn't look right. It looks off. There's too much going on, and it just makes the jersey look messy. There's no organization to it. I would like it if there was burgundy and maybe a little bit of blue trim on there, but the number just, it doesn't work for me. Maybe you replace like the gray stripe with blue. No, I don't think that would work. I just don't understand the reasoning for it. It's not even a particularly nice looking shade of blue. Like I said, it doesn't even match the pants. So every part of it just sticks out. And why do they keep screwing this up? All you gotta do to not screw it up is just not touch it. No one didn't like the jersey. They were good jerseys, and now they're just ugly. And there's no reason for them to be ugly. They were fine before. They were fine before the blue pants. They were fine before the blue number. Just bring it back. Or at least stop changing it. Or if you are going to change it, just commit to changing it. Just pick a lane and stick to it. Because the Avalanche have produced some pretty good blue jerseys before. You look at some of their old alternate jerseys and some of the ones they have now, the blue ones are actually very pretty and very beautiful. But it only looks good when you commit to a bit. Just commit to one. If it's going to be burgundy, make it burgundy. If it's burgundy and black, make it burgundy and black. If it's burgundy and blue, make it burgundy and blue. Stop picking at it and nitpicking the little details. Like, is next season the nameplate going to be blue? Is the bottom stripe going to be blue? Or is it going to be burgundy next year? Like, pick one and stop picking at it. Stop picking the scab. Just leave it alone. Leave it alone. So that's all I have to say on that. Like, I just don't get the phasing out of the black. I know some people don't like black on uniforms because it's too cliche and boring, but it makes it look more organized. The Avalanche have a very, very beautiful color scheme, in my opinion. I love the burgundy and blue. The Avalanche logo itself is a perfect example of that. It's a perfect balance of burgundy, blue trim with a white background. It looks very nice. It's very nice to look at. It's easy to decorate. Burgundy, I just think, is a very nice color, and you mix it with that blue, it just looks very nice. Blue, burgundy, and white should not be this hard to get right. And the thing is, it's not like they didn't get it right before. So I don't understand why we're doing this. Just leave it. Leave it alone. Stop picking at it. I don't understand why we keep doing this. And because there's just no need to. Stop. Stop picking at the jerseys. Leave them alone. And the home jerseys look great. I love our home jerseys. I think they're one of the prettiest in the league. You got the burgundy base with the blue at the top and bottom with the gray trim. And you go back to our road jerseys now. It's the white base with the burgundy top and bottom. And now you're just randomly throwing blue in there. And I just don't understand it. You got the home jersey right. All of the numbers and the nameplates are white. And the burgundy background mixes nicely with the logo. The blue is not intrusive. It's not too bright. And the away jerseys, it's just a hodgepodge of garbage. The blue does not work. It doesn't mix well with the other colors. And like I said, it just makes it look messy. And it doesn't make any sense because they nailed the home jerseys and they stopped picking at it. They just leave them alone. And our alternate jerseys, the dark blue with the white and burgundy, are beautiful. And the reverse retro with the blue numbers was really nice. It was really nice because the blue wasn't overpowered by the burgundy in it. It was a mainly white jersey with splashes of burgundy on the wrists, the bottom, and on the sleeves. The numbers were blue, but the nameplate was burgundy. And the outline was also burgundy. And they did the burgundy with the blue outline on these jerseys. And same with the nameplate. But it just doesn't work with the top and bottom of the jersey being burgundy. I've said burgundy so many times, it doesn't sound like a word anymore. But I just don't get it. It doesn't look good. Stop picking at it. Just leave it alone. Stop changing it every year. Just leave them alone. You have good jerseys. They look nice. You have a nice color scheme. Just stop ruining it. No one complained about it. No one cared. But anyway, moving on from the weirdness of the jerseys now, I wanted to talk about some drama that's going on in the Central Division with the Minnesota Wild and Kirill Kaprizov. But first, we do have to take a break and get a word from our sponsor, DraftKings Sportsbook. Hey everybody, hope you're enjoying the episode so far. Interrupting to tell you that the Teledabs It Is podcast is sponsored by DraftKings Sportsbook. Week one may be over, but the season's just getting started at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. To kick off week two, DraftKings is giving new customers $200 in free bets instantly when they bet $1 on any football game. That's right, head to the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and place a bet of $1 on any week two game to receive $200 in free bets instantly. And if DraftKings is not yet available in your state, DraftKings still has huge cash prizes up for grabs all season long with their daily fantasy contests. And DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code THPN to receive $200 in free bets when you place a $1 bet on any football game. That's promo code THPN this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only, minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required, one per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Now, back to the episode. So I wanted to talk about the Minnesota Wild and Kirill Kaprizov and the update that's gone on with him, and I figure now is as good a time as any to tell you who the guest is going to be for this week's Central Division Rundown. It is going to be the guys at the SodaPod podcast to talk about the Minnesota Wild and what to expect out of them this upcoming season. So we'll get into the Kaprizov situation far more with them. This will just be a general update to update you on what's going on with them, since Minnesota is kind of our biggest rival and from last season and coming into this season, and Kaprizov's kind of a big deal. And basically, Michael Russo dropped another bomb on The Athletic saying that the Kirill Kaprizov contract talks have gone silent again, and Bill Guerin admits that there are some obstacles to be overcome before he can be re-signed. And Russo opens the article saying, "We've hit a critical juncture in the contentious, once again silent contract negotiations between Kirill Kaprizov and the Minnesota Wild." Getting to a quote later on, "There are going to be some obstacles," an exasperated sounding Guerin admitted to The Athletic on Monday night, and probably the biggest portion of the article saying it's looking more and more probable that at a minimum Kaprizov won't be on the ice when the Wild open training camp on September 23rd. This is something that has been happening for all offseason now. I think I have brought this up at least four times at this point. He signed that tentative $10 million deal with CSKA Moscow as like either like a backup plan or as pressure a little earlier in the offseason. And this has been one of the most, this has been the most interesting RFA negotiation to come out of this offseason. And by the time it's done, it could very well change the face of RFA negotiations. And he's not even the only guy still on the market right now, on the RFA market. Kaprizov, obviously number one. Quinn Hughes, Brady Tkachuk, Rasmus Dahlin, Kyler Yamamoto, Elias Pettersson, and Robert Thomas are all still unsigned. And obviously Kaprizov is far and away the most interesting of all of them, because he's had very interesting rumors to come out of him with this negotiation, that he is asking for a shorter term deal so that he can maximize his earnings with unrestricted free agency, even though Minnesota has offered him about $9 million for the maximum term and he has turned it down. And now it seems like the rumor is they're talking about $9 million for 5 years to take him straight to unrestricted free agency. Just what a fascinating scenario to follow. And we've all got fantasy drafts upcoming soon. I just took over a keeper league here at the Hockey Podcast Network, and the team I took over has Kaprizov on it. And I'm wondering if I should keep him. And looking ahead at mock drafts and everything for the upcoming season for regular leagues, I'm wondering if Kaprizov is even worth drafting, because it looks like we're headed for another William Nylander situation from a few years ago where he sat out until December, and I'm not entirely certain that he's going to sign at all. I mean, this is... I've never seen a situation like this before, ever. And the article goes on to state basically what I just said earlier, is that the Wild have offered Kaprizov a variety of terms around $9 million per year, which would be the largest cap hit in Wild history, and a very large cap hit for somebody who has only played 55 games in the NHL. And granted, they were a very good 55 games, but it's only 55 games nonetheless. That's a ton of money to be sinking into one player. I mean, for perspective, Mikko Rantanen, who, as we know, is very good and is going to emerge as one of the best goal-scoring wingers in the league this season, makes $9.25 million on a six-year contract. And Kaprizov, after 55 games, is probably going to be getting somewhere in that window. Now, granted, Kaprizov is not your typical only played 55 games in the NHL. He's played plenty of years in Russia, and he scored the gold medal clinching goal for Russia in the Olympics. He's won championships with CSKA Moscow, been named MVP. He's been very good in professional hockey. He's been in professional hockey for a long time. And I am just very fascinated to see how this will go. I'm very fascinated to see what Isha and State of Hoppy says on the Soda Pod podcast when I have them on to record on Sunday when the episode releases on Monday. I'm very interested to see their take on the situation and what is really going on here, and if this is going to carry over into the season. Because one of the things that Russo brings up in this article is that even if Kaprizov signs right now, he still has to get tested for COVID. He has to get a work visa to travel to the United States, and he probably has to quarantine for at least 7 days before he'll be allowed inside the facility. And that training camp opens in, by the time you're listening to this, a week for them. It opens on the next Thursday, so it'll be a week before training camp opens. So at very least, he's not going to be there for the beginning of training camp. He's not even in the country. He's still in Russia at the moment. So again, this is going to be something that's going to probably carry into the season. And unfortunately for Minnesota, and maybe fortunately for the rest of the Central Division, I mean, this is definitely something for the Avalanche to keep an eye on as well. I don't think we actually see the Wild for a little bit now. I mean, we're not going to see him in any of the exhibition games we have against them. We play the Wild twice, I think, back-to-back on September 30th and October 4th. Yeah, we play them back-to-back. So we do see Minnesota in October, the last game of October on the 30th. We will host them for the first time at 7 p.m. Mountain Time. A good chance Kaprizov is not playing in that game, so this is going to be a situation to the entire league to be keeping an eye on. I mean, I talk about it all the time. Minnesota has gone from the least noteworthy team to probably one of the most exciting teams in the NHL for kind of all the wrong reasons right now. I mean, this is one of the most interesting negotiations I've ever seen. I'm fascinated to see how this will go. I think they will get him signed, but I just don't know. It's not like they're skimping out on the money or not giving him the term that he wants. Like, this is not a Landeskog situation where we're shorting him on term and he thinks he's worth more. Like, they're giving him Kaprizov very fair offers, and he just doesn't want him. He is fully committed to betting on himself. To be in that position to turn down 5 years of security, especially 8 years of security at $9 million per, is a ballsy move, man. I mean, full respect to him if he pulls this off, but if he gets the contract he wants, he gets a shorter-term deal, and he gets hurt, it's just, that's not a risk that I don't think is very smart. Like, you never know what the future can hold. And obviously, if everything works out for him, he's going to be one of the highest paid players in the NHL once he gets that second contract. But you can never predict what's going to happen on a day-by-day basis. You can just be skating, hit a divot in the ice, and tear your Achilles. You can block a shot ricochet off of someone's stick, hit you in the face, and break your face. Like, you never know. I mean, to turn down 8 years of security at $9 million a season, which is, like I said, already the highest cap hit in Wild history, and puts him in pretty respectable company in terms of cap hits for wingers. I hope he knows what he's doing here, and I hope his agent is really giving him some good advice here. And again, like, 9 times 5, that's a very fair deal. Does he really want that 3-year deal? I mean, it's smart, and it has the potential to work out for him, but it has one hell of a risk he is gambling on here. And like, let's say he does go back to Moscow. Who says he doesn't get hurt in Russia next year? Like, there's just so many risks at play for him here, and I am fascinated to see how this will go, and if Minnesota is going to bend to him, or if they're just getting tired of this shit at this point. It took them 5.5 years to get him over here. They drafted him in 2015. He was drafted before Rantanen, and it took forever for him to get him here, and he finally gets here. It's in a pandemic-shortened season with no fans. He's everything they could have hoped for, and now they're in this ridiculous negotiation with him where they're offering him what he wants, just not at the shorter term, ironically enough, that he wants. And now he's being difficult about that too. I imagine they are so frustrated right now, and they obviously want him. They're not going to be like, okay, fuck you, Kirill, we're cutting you loose. No, they're going to do whatever it takes to keep him. But I imagine that they are so done with this crap, and they just want Kaprizov on the team. Who wouldn't? He's really good, and he's going to be really good for several years down the line. But I can't wait to see what the guys at the Soda Pod say about it when I talk to them for Monday's episode. But as for this edition of the Teledavs Is podcast, I think that is going to do it. So thank you very much once again for tuning in. I really do appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. I say it every episode, but I can never say it enough, just how much I appreciate you all listening time after time again, even though you don't have to. And there are podcasts like DNVR and other stuff with insiders and stuff like that that you can listen to. The fact that you choose to stick it out here with me, it means something to me. It really does. I truly do appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. So thank you once again for tuning in. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at GYoungsNHL. If you want to follow the show, it is at TellItAsItIs on Twitter. If you want to leave a nice review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from, I really would appreciate it, as it does help out the show a lot. But once again, thank you so much for tuning in. I have been your host, Griffin Youngs, and I will catch you all next time when we catch up with the guys at the Soda Pod once again to talk about the Minnesota Wild. And I'm telling you guys, season's going to be here sooner than you think. So enjoy our time off while it lasts, before we're thinking about hockey 24/7, and enjoy the rest of your week. I will catch you all next time.